Well, if you got a Bible and you'd like to follow along, I'll be in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 16, all the way through chapter 2 and verse 11. I met with a young man a while back, and by young man, I mean someone my age. I don't think he's much older than me. He's even older than me, and I'm saying young man. But I met with him, and we had conversations about meaning, conversations about our place in the world, conversations about spirituality, and here's where his conclusion came down to. He said, "I feel lost." And he sat there and looked off in the distance. We were sitting in a coffee shop in front of a window, and he was looking out, and the sun was going down. He was looking out to the sky. He said, "I feel lost," and he looked out the window for a while. Then he said, "I am lost." And he said, "I don't know my place in the world. I don't know how I can make sense of this world. I've been trying to find my place here in the world, but I just am lost." And so it is with us, brothers and sisters, all who are apart from God and Christ. We are all left to figuring out what our place is in the world. There's no neutrality in that. We covered that last week. We all are left to finding our place in the world. Can't sit neutrally back and saying, "Well, I won't find any place in the world. I won't believe in anything at all. I'll just pass through." We all have some sort of ideology and some sort of way of making sense of the world and finding our place in it. Have you considered what your place in the world is, brothers and sisters? Have you considered what your place is in the world? Because the quest to considering our place in the world is no new thing. It is something that we try quite hard at. You can look in your own soul, and if you're being honest, we find that we are trying quite hard at finding a place in the world. We can look outside these church walls, into our cities, into our communities, into our families, into the lives of our friends, and we can know that they are trying quite hard to find their place in the world. We can even look at the Bible and the story of the Bible that God gives to us, and we can find that the quest to find meaning and to find purpose is no new thing. It actually started in the very beginning when the fall happened, when human beings rebelled against a good and holy God. They said, "We don't want your rule, we want things our way." And ever since then, we've been cut off from the source of life, and we've been left to trying to find meaning and purpose on our own. This notion that we are all on a quest to find our place in the world, it actually makes sense if we look to Scripture. Later in Ecclesiastes, it is written, "He has made everything beautiful in his time, and also he's put eternity into man's hearts, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end." Focus on that little deal that says he has put eternity on man's hearts. A lot of us know what eternity is, right? Even if you don't know the formal definition of the word, you know eternity in your heart. You know that longing to live forever, to have eternal, forever implications for your life to eternally matter, for your soul to have eternal significance. We all have eternity written on our hearts. And it's nothing that we can shake, no matter how hard we try. People try to shake this reality that eternity is written on our hearts. They try and try and try. They try to make it about the temporal. They try to make it about the physical that we see outside. They try to make it about good things like family and career and success. The deal is, eternity is written on your heart. And here enters Koheleth. If you were here last week, the very first verse here in Ecclesiastes says, "The word of the preacher," and preacher means in the Hebrew Koheleth, and for the sake of this series, we're going to say preacher, teacher, but in here enters Koheleth, or the preacher. And I want to read to you this quote from Derek Kidner. He's trying to get his grasp on the world. He's trying to make sense of it. He's trying to have wisdom about how to fit in. And here's what Derek Kidner has to say about the wisdom which what he's trying to apply into the world. Derek writes, "Koheleth is taking wisdom with proper seriousness. He's taking it with proper seriousness. It goes beyond trying to kind of this trivial sort of wisdom, if you will. He's going at it with a more deeper grasp here. He's taking with proper seriousness as a discipline concerned with ultimate questions, not simply a tool for getting things done. See, wisdom can be sort of pragmatic, and what I mean by pragmatic is you have this wisdom and you use it to get things done under the sun. But the preacher here in Ecclesiastes, he's going beyond that. He's saying, yeah, there is that, but what about these deeper things? What about the more serious? What about finding our place in the world? What about these ultimate questions about what's on the other side? What about these ultimate questions of what really completes my heart? What about this ultimate question, can my heart be completed? What about the ultimate questions of salvation? What about the ultimate questions of what are we saved from? This is the wisdom which he's trying to grasp. That's a pretty big thing and deep thing, isn't it? And you know what? The more we try, the more you try, the more I try to figure my place or your place out in the world, the more we try to take wisdom with proper seriousness in our own flesh, and the more we try to apply it and try to make sense in the world, and the more we try to say, why is there brokenness and why do bad things happen, or this, that, or the other thing, why is there brokenness in my family, why are my friends in this spot, why is there an aching of the soul in so many lives, and indeed my own life? The more we try to figure out our place in the world, the more frustrating it becomes. The more we try to dig into this problem with our own wisdom, the more frustrating it becomes, and we come up with more questions than answers, and aren't we looking for the answers at the end of the day? But yet our own striving, our own trying to apply our own knowledge to the problems of life, these big questions of life, these ultimate questions of life, we just get more frustrated the more we try to figure it out. Hear this. It is frustrating, and yet we continue to insist that we are gods who can figure it out. Even though it's frustrating and futile, I'm going to say this again, we insist that we are little g gods and we can figure it out. Isn't that what we said to God in our fallenness? We recognize your claims that you are God, but I want to be God. I'm going to figure this out. It's not what we see here in this text, though. We see that because of the Bible, and because the God of the Bible is the only one who has our place in the world figured out. I'm going to say that again. Because the God of the Bible is the only person who has our place in the world figured out, our hearts will only find their place in him, both finding our place here in this world and in eternity. We will only find our place in him, because after all, he has our place in the world figured out. And so three areas I want to investigate with you this morning. There are at least three areas which we think we know better than God, if we're being really honest. At least three, probably more, but we think we know better than God when it comes to our problems, this ultimate problem. We think we know better than he when it comes to our needs, and we think we know better than he when it comes to our purpose. But here's what we're going to see today. He knows our problem far more than we do. He knows our needs far more than we do, and he knows our purpose far more than we do. So let's dive in here to this text, and let's get pointed to this God of the Bible, who is the source of truth. He knows our problem far more than we do. Brothers and sisters, have you ever had a time where you were confused on something or stuck on something? I often get stuck when I'm trying to work on a car. I'll get to a point where I can't figure it out, and it's probably a really simple thing, but in my own wisdom, I'm trying to work on it, and I can't get to the bottom of what's going on. I can't get to the bottom of what to do. And so I go around to different places. I go to O'Reilly's in Sioux Falls or this place or that place, go to my dad, and I'm trying to find answers to this problem. And time it goes, I get more and more desperate to figure this out because I need my car. Well, I remember the relief many times when I finally came to someone who had the answer to the problem. It was such a relief because I was like, here's the answer. We can get this thing going again. I don't know if you've had times like this, whether you're trying to figure out something in your family, or you're trying to figure out something in your faith walk, or you were trying to fix something and you didn't know the answer to the problem, and you're just searching, and you were desperately searching for an answer, and then you have the relief of the soul when you finally find the answer, because then the solution can be found. We do not naturally possess godly wisdom. This thing called sin, brothers and sisters, the reason why there's brokenness in our hearts and brokenness in the world, the reason why there's evil out in the world, we do not naturally possess the godly wisdom that is needed to address these issues. Because of this, we will never tap into the answers for the big problems in our world. I want to jump in here to the text and let's see what the preacher has to say here. The preacher says, "In my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge, and I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly, and I perceived that this was a striving after wind." And here's what he's saying in verse 17. When he says, "I tried to apply my heart to know madness and folly," what it means here in the Hebrew is this: he's trying to figure out evil. He's trying to figure out foolishness. He's trying to figure out why there is evil things done under the sun. He's trying to figure it out. And he realizes, he's saying here, is like, I had wisdom that surpassed all who are around me. I was the greatest in Jerusalem. I surpassed them. And I was trying to figure out madness and folly. I was trying to figure out foolishness under the sun. I was trying to figure out why evil happens. And I couldn't do it. It was a striving after wind. It was striving after wind. He's trying to go after something. He's trying to run after it. And he sees it, but it's just grabbing on to wind. And he never is able to grab onto the answer for it. And wow, if we are honest with ourselves, brothers and sisters, we do this too. Even as believers in Jesus, in our fallenness, many times we try to figure out evil out in the world in our own strength. I try to do this all the time. I try to look out, particularly in the church and in denominations, why there is so much evil in churches. I try to figure out why is false doctrine so rampant oftentimes? Why is the work of Christ often so redefined? Why is there so much sexual sin from pastors and churches? I try to figure that out oftentimes. Or why isn't it dealt with? I try to figure that out oftentimes. Or why do denominations, looking at the very Word of God, and looking at the very one who has come to save us, Jesus Christ, why do they turn from the truth to go to their own way? And I've tried to figure that out on my own year after year after year. And I come with more questions than answers. And I find that it's the unsolvable, because I'm trying to figure out Satan's work on my own terms in the world. And you guys might do this too. I don't know if you're trying to figure out, hey, why is this happening in my family? Why is this family member so stubborn to the gospel of Jesus Christ? Why are they so stubborn and insistent on going their own way? You might be trying to figure that out year after year and year and not find an answer. Or you might look out in the world in our country and saying, why is this, why is that happening in our country? What are the solutions to that? And those are good questions to ponder. It taps into the political realm. But if we're not careful, apart from God and Christ, we come up pretty empty. And it's a striving after wind, and it's frustrating. Because we're trying to apply our heart to no wisdom and to no madness and no foolishness. We can't figure it out. The more we self-indulge, the emptier we become, brothers and sisters. He ultimately writes, the preacher, "For in much wisdom is much vexation." Vexation means frustration. "And he who increases knowledge increases sorrow." The more he's trying to figure out these things, the more he increases his sorrow. The more he tries to figure out the ultimate questions in life, the more he comes to sorrow. So what are we to do with this before we move on if we can't figure out the evil under the sun that we experience? I want to read to you 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 20 through 21. Because if we can't figure it out, one outside of us is going to have to. Just as if I couldn't figure out what's wrong with my car, someone from the outside is going to have to tell me. Paul writes, "Where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world?" So here's what he's saying. Where is the one who is wise if there's such a thing? Where is the scribe if there's such a thing? Where is the debater of this age if that's such a thing? Where is this political person that knows all the answers if that's such a thing? Where are these people? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? Has not God made our answers to these ultimate questions foolishness? Well, how has he done it? For since in the wisdom of God, Paul continues to write, the world did not know God through wisdom, it pleased God through the folly or the foolishness of what we preach to save those who believe. So here's what Paul is saying. Even if it was possible, God's quote-unquote foolishness in our own eyes is his wisdom to save the world. We look at Christ, we look at someone who dies on a tree, we look at someone who was willing to take on our sin, our iniquity, we look at someone who is willing to stand in the justice of God so that we wouldn't be punished for the wrong things we do, and we can consider that foolishness, we consider that unwise, and we might consider that we have more wise ways of looking at it, but here's the deal, even the quote-unquote what we deem from God as foolishness, that destroys our wisdom, it obliterates it. He came through the foolishness of the cross, as Paul writes, to destroy our wisdom that we think we have. And therefore, Paul writes, where's the one who is wise? Because one who is truly wise has come. Jesus Christ has come. The God of the Bible has orchestrated a plan of salvation that is truly wise. The God of the Bible has orchestrated a solution for the problem of evil that is truly wise. And it's upside down because he came and he emptied himself. He came and he was willing to dwell among us, fully God, fully man. And he was willing to go to the cross and bear our iniquity and our punishment in our place. And he was willing and able and quite able to be raised from the dead. So now he can justify those who place their faith in him. That's the wisdom of God. And what you're going to find in the world is this. It's going to be accused of as foolishness. It's going to be accused of as unwise. People here in our culture, in our cultural moment, in our world, are going to say, are going to accuse this of foolishness, the gospel of foolishness, and they're going to claim to be wise and have wise solutions, whether it be political or moral or philosophical or some sort of ideology. But here at the end of the day, he knows our problem far more than we do. So let's look to him. We know that there is one who has our problem figured out as well as the solution. But where does our wisdom take us from God next? If we continue to rebel against the wisdom of God, we'll find out that we're empty in that. And so where does that lead us to next? The preacher moved on to self-indulgence at this point. He said, well, maybe if I'm getting frustrated at trying to figure out evil on my own, maybe if I'm getting frustrated at figuring out the meaning of life on my own, maybe I'll just put the question aside altogether and live for self-indulgence. And that won't work either because he knows far more about what we need than we do. Really quickly here, we do not naturally know what we need either. Because of this, we will never be able to provide enough to complete our heart. Look at all the things which the preacher tries to complete his heart with. He looks to laughter and said that it's mad. He looks to pleasure and says, what use is it? He looks to wine and tries to cheer his heart with it. And he says, my heart was still trying to guide me with wisdom, but I looked to wine, that didn't work. And I tried to lay hold of foolishness and folly, all the things under the sun, all the things of the pleasure. And he didn't deny anything. He made great works. He built houses. He planted vineyards. He made gardens. He made pools. He made a forest. He had slaves. He had servants. He had great possessions, more than anyone in Jerusalem. And he gathered silver and gold and kings and provinces, singers, which was rare in the day, both men and women, and had many wives and concubines, the delight of the sons of man. So he tries many things. He tries food and drink. He tries sexuality. And he tries laughter. He tries pleasure. He tries riches. He tries silver and gold. He tries money. All these things. He tries to build himself this great garden. In a sense, a Garden Eden. Because remember, he's thinking of himself as a little g god, so he builds himself this garden, as it were. Because remember the perfect Garden Eden in the beginning. He's trying to get back to that, don't you see? When we try to build our little kingdoms, we are trying to get back to the beginning when Adam and Eve were in the Garden of Eden, everything was perfect. And in our material ways, in our homes, with our cars, with our gardens, with our money, we try to get back to that, and nothing we ever do will be able to get there. And if we're honest with ourselves too, we know that we do this too, don't we? We know that it's very tempting to make it all about our house. We know that it's very tempting to make it all about our possessions. We know it's very tempting to, in our cultural moment especially, to look to sexuality as a source of meaning. Look to marriage or look to family as a source of meaning. And it simply won't work. The more we self-indulge, the emptier we become. As the preacher says, in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure, enjoy yourself. But he said, behold, this is also vanity. And by vanity, that means emptiness. So what? So let your heart find its place in the one who never bowed to temptation. Brothers and sisters, for trying to make our own meaning with our own wisdom, with our own ways of building our own kingdoms, like with good things in the world, if we're trying to address this problem of evil by our own ways, by building what's comfortable, then we're going to miss what ultimately matters. There's many good things under the sun that can matter in God, but if we look to those ultimately, then all of a sudden it doesn't matter. Because there's eternity, and if we were separated from God for eternity, there is no meaning. What does really matter? We really think so often that our wisdom matters so much, that our politics matter so much, and our houses matter so much, that our education matters so much, that our career matters so much, that our aimless activities matter so much, that our morality matters so much. Let's not miss what truly matters, brothers and sisters. Let's not miss that when Jesus was on his way to the cross, when he was tempted with all these things, he didn't bow to it once. Why? He knew what ultimately mattered. He knew that God's plan of salvation is what ultimately matters. He knew that glorifying his heavenly Father is what ultimately matters. And he knew that's how we could be complete, because apart from God, we are not. So even though we bow to temptation after temptation, what I just listed off here, Jesus never bowed to it once, even though he was tempted as we were. So we know that he knows both our problem and our needs. But what about the long term? What are we to do, as the preacher says, vanity, vanity, everything's meaningless. Everything's like chasing the wind. If we're left to this point, where do we go from here, and what's the long-term solution here? Lastly, he knows our purpose far more than we do. We know that our pursuits for purpose work for a while. This is really interesting here in verse 9 here. He writes, I became great. I surpassed all who were with me in Jerusalem. My wisdom remained with me. I didn't keep anything from my eyes, and I kept my heart from no pleasure. And, you know, my heart did find pleasure in all my toil. And this was my reward for my toil. So he acknowledges there's this sort of short-term gratification, what he's trying to chase apart from God, whether it be the material or whether it be wisdom. He recognizes that, but is that long-term? I lived in South Central Kansas for 4 years with my family, and when it came time to move, my dad had an old 1979 Firebird that had to go from Kingman, Kansas, to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which was about 550 miles. And I remember asking him, "Do you think you'll make it? Do you think you'll make it?" And Dad reassured me that said it absolutely will make it. So here's what we did. Me and my brother Jeremiah, we, on a Sunday morning, to get a head start, because I could only go about 50 or 55 the whole way for 550 miles, we got a head start on a Sunday morning, and Mom and Dad were at church, and Dad was delivering the message that day, and I was moving that Firebird up with my brother to Sioux Falls. And I started going north on Highway 14 in Kansas, out of Kingman. We made about 50 miles, and the gas gauge was on half, and I started seeing it do this. Well, I thought it was an old car. The gas gauge doesn't work. I didn't think anything of it, but 10 miles later, I look in the rearview mirror, and there's this trail behind me. I was like, well, that's weird. We didn't really go through any rain, or the car's not wet, but yet there's this wet trail behind me, and it's very distinct. And so we got about 60 miles from Kingman, out in the middle of nowhere in Kansas. We made it to Sterling, Kansas. It's a Sunday morning. It's a town of 1,800 people. Stop at a gas station. I look, and the fuel line at the back is just dumping gas everywhere. It was able to go from half tank 30 miles ago to just about empty 30 miles later in Sterling, Kansas. And I knew there was not really any hope at all. It's a Sunday morning in a small town. I heard the church bells going off all around me. No mechanic open. So me and my brother, we just sat in the car not knowing what to do. Mom and Dad wasn't able to help us, and neither was anyone there. So we just sat in the parking lot for a couple hours. And then I looked across the street, and there was a mechanic shop, and his garage was actually open on a Sunday morning. And so I said, well, Jeremiah, let's go talk to him. And I said, there was actually a mechanic there on a Sunday morning in small town rural Kansas that early in the morning. And I asked him, here's our problem. We got a fuel line that's completely out. Could you look at it? And he said, sort of begrudgingly, he said, yeah, I think I can. Let's bring it over here and put it up on the lift. And so he put it up on the lift, did a little fix. He was really proud of himself. It only took him about 15 minutes. And he put it back down on the lift. I had the keys to the car. I said, thank you so much. And he said, that ought to get you back to Kingman. And I said, oh, no, sir, we're going to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Will it make it there? And he kind of looked in a little bit. He's like, well, no, it won't get you to Sioux Falls. It could get you back to Kingman, but not to Sioux Falls. So he said, oh, drive it back, and we'll put it back on the lift. And then he offered a more long-term solution to the problem. And the long-term thing, 10 years later, is still working. There's these sort of band-aids that we put on our problems during this life. It can make our heart feel good and pleasurable for a time. We can think we know in our strength and our intellectual strength that we know the problem of evil and we know the solution, we know how to get through life. But at the end of the day, on your deathbed, when the other side is just before you, that's not going to amount to anything. Your material possessions, your wisdom, your morality, apart from God on your deathbed before the judge of the universe, won't amount to anything. There needs to be a long-term solution. There needs to be a long-term solution so that there's not vanity, as it says in verse 11, so that we're not striving after wind, as it says in verse 11, so that we're not separated from a good God, as it says in verse 11. Man, long-term our pursuits end in frustration. We need to understand that. And eternally, our pursuits apart from God end in destruction. It doesn't matter how moral you've been or how much you've done with your hands. It doesn't matter how big of a business you built. It doesn't matter what your bank account says on your very last day. So I hear people on their deathbed, they either ask about where's my car or how much money's in my bank or where's my money going to. Those aren't the questions to be asking eternally. Let your heart find its place, rather, in the gospel of Jesus Christ, not in the things under the sun. Let your heart rest in the good news of Jesus Christ, that on the cross, he secured for us a relationship with a good and holy God. Let your heart rest in that rather than your own wisdom, that he's got it all figured out. He's got all the evil and the foolishness in the world and in your own heart figured out. He has the plan of salvation, even though that you were so stuck in your rebellion, he had it figured out a way for you to be in a good relationship with God because of the work he done on the cross and because that gift is available to us by grace, undeserved favor, through faith. So let your heart find its place in the gospel of Christ, the very thing that gives everything purpose all of a sudden. When things are trying to figure out, what things are you trying to figure out that can't be figured out? Remember, as I said earlier, Christians do this all the time, even believers in Jesus. In our fallenness, we try to figure things out which can't be figured out. Ask yourself this, what things are you trying to figure out that you've been frustrated with? What things are you trying to figure out that you're just coming to the conclusion it can't be figured out? What things are you trying to figure out that are stealing your joy? What things are you trying to figure out that is robbing you of the peace that can only come through Jesus Christ and what he's done for you on the cross? What things are you trying to figure out that seem to pull at your soul more than what Jesus has done for you on the cross? What are those things? Because the more you try to figure it out in your own wisdom, the more frustrated that you will be. And so look to the one who knows your place in the world and let your heart be complete in him, in him alone. And what about the stuff we still don't understand, the side of heaven? I want to read to you a quote as we close our time together from Philip Graham Ryken. This quote speaks for itself. It's beautiful. Listen to this and we'll conclude our time today. What about the stuff that we still don't understand? What about how are we supposed to make our meaning in life, even in Christ, when we go out and see brokenness all around us? How are we trying to make sense of it as a church? When we know we are supposed to go out with the gospel of Jesus Christ in a dark world, how are you supposed to make sense of it? How are you supposed to find meaning then? What about the stuff that we still don't understand? Philip Graham Ryken writes this, quote, "We need to be content to leave the final calculations to God. Jesus will see to it that all of God's books balance in the end, including our own personal account, which he will reconcile by his own blood. Thus, our present frustration will not last forever, including all of the struggles we have to understand the meaning of life. Soon our sorrows will be over. To our everlasting joy, we will be with Jesus forever, and we will find in him the answer to all of our questions." Amen.